From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
On the 47th anniversary of the devastating Roe v. Wade decision, the pro-life movement gathered across the country to mourn the deaths of more than 60 million children since 1973, and to make a stand for the sanctity of life from conception to natural death. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Andrew Walther, Vice President of the Knights of Columbus, about their latest poll with Marist on Americans' attitudes on abortion ahead of the 2020 election. And then we're joined by Register staff writer Loretta Brown for a discussion on another poll, a controversial one on whether women regret their abortions. We also take a look at Loretta's most recent profile of pro-life Democrat Katrina Jackson. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Hey, Matthew.
Good to be with you.
A big week in Washington this week. So, you know, election years are amazing years for watching issues, right? And an issue of significant importance for the Register's readers and our listeners is abortion. But is it a significant issue for the rest of the country? And I think that's the question that the Knights of Columbus and the Marist group surveyed Americans about. Where are we as a country 50 years, almost 50 years, after Roe v. Wade? Today we're joined by Andrew Walther, Vice President of the Knights of Columbus, to discuss the poll. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
So, Andrew, I mean, that's the very question that that we need to ask is where are we as a country 50 years later after so many unborn children have lost their lives? Has our view on abortion changed?
Well, I think our view on abortion has been, you know, consistently complicated in terms of not really accepting the law of abortion on demand as it is, as a morally correct or legally correct principle. I think the idea that Roe v. Wade created settled law for 9 months of abortion is something that between 7 and 8 in 10 Americans have had a problem with since we began polling on this 12 years ago. And it's also a substantial driver during election years of how people look at candidates. I mean, just this year, we asked people specifically if this was a factor in how they voted. Mm-hmm. And 38% said it was a major factor, and 36% said a minor factor in their vote for president. And you also had 65% who said that when it came to voting for candidates, they were more likely to vote for a candidate who wanted significant restrictions on abortion. So you've got two-thirds of Americans almost in that question saying they're looking, whenever possible, to vote for the candidate who supports some substantial restrictions on abortion. And I think this is borne out by the fact that last election cycle, almost 4 years ago now, in 2016, the most Googled term on Election Day, according to the Washington Post and Google itself, was abortion.
Oh, very interesting. Wow. Yeah, you know, as you said at the very start of your answer there, it's so complicated. The views of abortion in this country are so complicated. And while basically, you know, we believe that Roe v. Wade is abortion on demand, and there are many Democrat politicians, especially in the last couple of years, who have campaigned on that, that there would be no restrictions on abortion. This poll found that 55% of people were pro-choice. But as you just said, so many people want to have restrictions on abortion. It's a real disconnect. It seems that the country is still very divided on the topic, but also we don't actually understand what we've got or what is being presented to us by politicians. How do you reconcile such confusing data?
Well, I think there are two things we have to keep in mind. One is that when you look at the numbers, to me, the most interesting thing is that we should note that the term pro-choice as a political term to describe voters or Americans is pretty much meaningless. Between 4 in 10 and 6 in 10 of the people who identify as pro-choice support the kind of legislative or court rulings that we would consider pro-life. So you have between 40 and 60%, basically half of the pro-choice self-identifying group is supporting repeatedly pro-life legislation or pro-life outcomes at the court level. On the other hand, the pro-life term, as you might expect, it's three quarters or higher on almost everything. It's often 80, 90, 90 something percent of that group is saying they support the same kind of legislation. So I think we have a situation in which the political vocabulary has not kept up with the fragmentation of the pro-choice identifier. And so when we get these stories every year, X number's pro-life, X number's pro-choice, we've been doing this for 12 years, that number bounces around enormously. What doesn't bounce around is that the pro-choice side is very divided over what it means, and the pro-life side is very united over what it means. So when half of pro-choicers are taking the same position as 90%, that's a pretty interesting outcome. And I think we need to think about this debate not simply in terms of party, not simply in terms of label, not simply in terms of any sort of single heading over which, you know, under which we can put different people. The actual policies that people support are not at all what you might anticipate. Our Supreme Knight wrote about this in the Wall Street Journal yesterday in terms of the, you know, the importance of both parties listening to their people. You have about half of Democrats that want pro-life legislation. You have a substantial majority of independents that want pro-life legislation. You have an overwhelming majority of Republicans that want pro-life legislation. This is something that is really bipartisan. If you had people on, you know, in all three of those, Republican, independent, and Democrat, if you had huge numbers of people in all three of those that were looking for pro-abortion legislation, that would be notable in a different way. But the truth is, you've got really, when you look at pro-life and pro-choice, or when you look at party identifier, you have enormous consensus across party lines, and you have enormous consensus across pro-life, pro-choice identifiers, all of it in the direction of life.
Yeah, Andrew, Tulsi Gabbard, one of the presidential candidates for the Democratic Party, was hammered this last year for making the statement that there should be some types of restrictions on abortion, which would seem to place her within that very group that you're talking about. And yet, virtually every other candidate running would be of the position that, in your poll, that, to use your language, that abortion to be available to a woman any time during her entire pregnancy. How is this playing out right now, and how do you think it will play out in the 2020 election?
Well, you know, I think it's notable that on election day, abortion was the most searched term by far, because that tells you that, you know, for whatever else Americans are saying, and there's more intensity among pro-lifers voting on the issue of abortion than pro-choicers. That's in our poll, 10 points more intense on the pro-life side. Whatever is happening, when it comes down to how people are going to vote on election day, what are they Googling? What do we know they Googled last time in 2016? We know they Googled abortion, which would seem to indicate that that's a pretty important issue to people that are getting ready to vote. And so, when we know that you have an overwhelming majority that want to vote for pro-life candidates or candidates that support restrictions on abortion, when we know that this is the most Googled term on election day historically, you start to ask yourself, you know, are people really looking at what constituents want? And, you know, the history of the Democratic Party, for example, there are many, you know, very strong pro-life voices, Sergeant Shriver notable among them, but there was a very strong tradition of pro-life candidates in the 70s in the Democratic Party. And so I think when you look at it today, what would be great would be to have pro-life candidates in both parties and then a debate on the rest of the issues. I mean, the fact that this is an issue that is so contentious at a political level, when it is really post-partisan at the grassroots level, I think should be indicative to politicians that they should maybe take a second look at this issue.
Absolutely. You know, that you mentioned the Supreme Knight, Carl Anderson's piece at the Wall Street Journal this week. It's called Waiting for a Moderate Democrat on Abortion. It's a great article. It's a great read. It points out many of the same things you've been pointing out to us on this interview. And really, the one of the biggest takeaways I see in this is that the Democratic presidential frontrunners, especially you know, the top three, are just leaving voters behind. I mean, that's what polls like this tell us. I think that's also what, you know, you're speaking of when you talk about the most Googled term. It's a wake up call in a way, but nobody's waking up on the Democratic side of the aisle, it seems. Andrew, is there anything else that you found surprising or particularly interesting in the poll as we just have a couple minutes left?
Well, I think that the consistency for now a dozen years of people looking at the substantial restrictions on abortion and having 7 to 8 out of 10 every year in and year out, say, yes, we want these substantial restrictions. I think that's very important, very stable. Mm-hmm. I think getting people to understand how unstable the pro-life, pro-choice dichotomous kind of questioning is, especially on the pro-choice side. The fact that if someone says they're pro-life, you can basically take to the bank what they believe in terms of legislation and judicial outcomes. But if someone says they're pro-choice, you really have no idea what that means. It could mean anything from abortion anytime to very, very strict limits on abortion and anything in between. So I think really moving our national discourse forward in a way that we understand that, you know, 7 in 10, 3/4 of Americans more or less have a long running consensus on the fact that we need more restrictions, not less, on abortion. And I think this makes sense to a lot of people. We have speed limits on our roads. We have restrictions on, you know, activities all over the place. We have restrictions on medical procedures. We have Americans are used to some level of restriction on things. And to say that the most morally conflicted issue in the country is the one issue that should have no regulation or almost no regulation, not surprisingly, doesn't resonate.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. Well, Andrew Walther, thank you so much for being with us. Our listeners can go to www.kofc.org. That's www.kofc.org to find the poll. This is the latest Marist poll with the Knights of Columbus on abortion views in America. When we come back, Matthew and I will talk to Loretta Brown about the latest in the pro-life movement. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Don't miss a moment of 2020. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Stay connected and follow the latest from Washington, D.C., the 2020 elections, along with events from the Vatican and the world. Only the National Catholic Register brings you in-depth news and analysis from a Catholic perspective. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. Don't miss a minute of 2020. Call or click today. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen here on Register Radio. A recent study touted by CNN and the Washington Post claimed that 5 years after their abortions, 84% of women felt positive or no emotions at all about their abortions. But pro-life researchers and groups like Silent No More and Project Rachel, which these groups who focus on counseling post-abortive women, they've called this study into question. To talk about the criticisms of this poll, we're joined by the Register's staff writer, Loretta Brown. Hi, Loretta.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So you did a great story on this poll. It's called "Pro-Life Advocates Criticize Study Claiming Most Women Don't Regret Their Abortions," and that's at ncregister.com. What were the biggest criticisms of these pro-lifers of the poll?
Yeah, so I think one thing that stood out to a lot of people was how small the sample size was, how small, you know, the amount of people participating. So it was 667 women, and that was only 27% of the invited women participated at the first six-month interview, and then by the end, only 17% like participated through to the end of the five-year period. And that was something, you know, multiple pro-life researchers noted, is just that they did not have good participation rates. And then the other thing that was noted was that even if you looked through the study itself, it acknowledged, so this is like a quote right from the study, women feeling more relief and happiness at baseline were less likely to be lost, meaning like to the study. So, like, conversely, you can say, you know, the women who were the least relieved and, you know, presumably had more negative feelings were the ones that were dropping out. So that,
right, they weren't participating.
Is, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was raised the question of bias by self-selection. And I think it makes sense if you think about you know, have had an abortion and you're kind of processing that and you are asked to participate in a study. And yeah, like the worse you feel, the less you want to talk about it. I think there's a lot of personalities like that. So that's,
certainly.
Yeah. So those were the two main criticisms I was noticing.
I was really impacted also by, I think it was Mary McCluskey made some points about women later in life. She said, you know, they train people who work in nursing homes to talk about abortion, because sometimes people don't tell anyone their entire lives, and it's at the very end of their lives that they just want to clean house, you know, and clean their souls basically, and tell somebody about the secret that they've never told. So I think it was Mary, and then another woman who had an abortion, right, who you interviewed, who said she didn't tell anyone, or she didn't have regret about her abortion until 19 years later. So yeah, the five-year window seems to be another problem with this study.
Right. Yeah, that was criticized, I think, very very rightfully as well, because, yeah, as you mentioned, the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, which is a group of women that speak out about their abortion regret, Georgette Forney, she had herself had an abortion, and she told me that it was 19 years after her abortion that she finally, you know, let herself face it and start grieving, because it was something that, you know, you don't want to, some women just don't want to face it or think about it or, you know, talk about it right away. And it does take time to admit to yourself and others kind of how you're really feeling about it. And another thing that I highlighted that frustrated me, frankly, that the other, you know, major media outlets you had mentioned that talked about the study didn't mention, was that, you know, the study was conducted by Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. Right, that sounds like a nice neutral name. But that's a collaborative research group at the University of California, San Francisco, you know, Center for Global Reproductive Health. That group was founded by an abortionist. The director of it is a Planned Parenthood board member and narrow consultant, or no, Planned Parenthood consultant and narrow board member, and the project director actually worked with Planned Parenthood in the past as well. Their stated mission, one of them, is advancing abortion access, and they have done a lot of other, you know, research that's just brazenly very. They say their goal is to, you know, increase, you know, lessen abortion stigma, increase abortion access, you know? So what frustrated me a little was that the critics of this study were being cited as anti-abortion activists. Mm-hmm. But this group often was not mentioned by name. And when it was just, oh, you know, the University of California, San Francisco. They didn't say any of the things I just said. And I understand that, like, often partisan groups, you know, groups with an agenda are the ones doing these specific studies. And I think that's fine as long as you disclose who you are and where you're coming from, you know?
Right. It's got to be transparent. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, That was a great point. I mean, it was a very good point that you made on that precise topic. And I loved how their response at the University of California was, these are people with PhDs. I'm like, whoop-de-doo. So it's it was kind of a silly response to a very serious question. You know, but the nice thing about your story is it does not just leave off with pointing out the problems with a survey on a very serious topic, and that's abortion regret. And many of the ministries that you spoke to that deal with women who have had abortions say that they do indeed regret it, and these ministries really try to help them through it. So you kind of left on a much more positive note that there is hope. And I know that the people from Silent No More do stand up for at the March for Life. They hold the signs that say that I regret my abortion, and these people increase every year. And it's important, I think, to highlight that and to tell their story. How does this this story that we are trying to tell about those who regret it, and in fact the March for Life? I mean, how does that combat the lies that are being told? Really by the rest of the media sometimes.
Well, you know, I think the media has a very decided narrative when it comes to abortion that becomes apparent the more you read, you know, the stories on the issue and when they feature studies like these in a very selective way. And I think what can give people pause and make people look is that these people, as you mentioned, like the group that focuses on abortion regret, Silent No More, Project Rachel, there are women who've been through it, who've had the abortion, you know, who are speaking out, and I think their stories are particularly powerful. I've noticed in my years covering the March for Life, they'll give speeches by the Supreme Court at the end of the march about their personal experiences, and it's very, like, powerful and personal, and often the handful of, you know, pro-abortion protesters that are there would try to, like, shout, you know, or... Mm-hmm. Offset that in some way. And it's interesting because I think the media has a narrative about what's pro-woman and what's, you know, oh, abortion is woman's rights. And right. Here are these women saying, you know, this is actually what it did to me. I want to talk about this. And so I think that, yeah, there's something uniquely powerful about that. And the more that, you know, these people can speak out and tell their own stories, and, you know, that sort of helps combat, I think, what a lot of people, the way that this is framed that a lot of people see, you know, in the media.
And talking about somebody with an interesting story, you had a chance to interview recently and profile Katrina Jackson. For those who may not be familiar with her, who is she?
So Katrina Jackson is an amazing, very accomplished woman. She is a state senator in Louisiana, and she is... she's a pro-life Democrat who has been, I mean, in Louisiana, that's not that uncommon, but it's great. Like, she authored the bill in, maybe you've heard, June Medical Services versus Gee, this case that's coming before the Supreme Court. I mean, the arguments will be in March. That is, seeking that abortion doctors have admitting privileges, you know, in a hospital to help, you know, ensure the safety of the women, you know, going to get abortions. And it's been, you know, very controversial. I think it's the first case in a while that the Supreme Court, you know, on abortion, the Supreme Court's taken up. And so Katrina Jackson is just a really powerful voice. And it was fascinating to talk to her because she's very, you know, informed on the law and, you know, the legal side of this issue, but also as a pro-life, you know, female legislator, she kind of defies a lot of those stereotypes, and she has a powerful story of saying, like, I'm a pro-life Democratic woman who holds these beliefs.
Incredibly powerful. I was at an event last weekend. It was the Louisiana Right to Life dinner gala. It was huge. There was almost 1,000 people who bought tickets for that event or who were there attending the event, 900 and something. Ben Clapper organized it. And she spoke. She was the MC for the whole night, and she is amazing. I mean, the name of Jesus was on her lips pretty much the whole night, and she just showed the power of someone who knows exactly what she's talking about legally, but also has faith And she's a Democrat, and she knows how to unite people. It was really, really an amazing experience. I wish we had more time, and I think we need to have another show to kind of talk about the very next thing I'm going to say. But in that room with Democrats and Christians and Catholics and Republicans and just the whole gamut, I looked around and I said, I think there's a moment here. This represents a moment of a change in America. And I think that our legislative side and our cultural side are finally kind of joining forces in the pro-life movement. And it's really exciting to see. And I think we have a lot to watch this year. Loretta, I know you have a lot to say on that topic. And I'm cutting you off because you can't say it all in 30 seconds. But we're going to have you back on to talk about whether or not this is a tipping point in America. But thank you so much for the coverage you're doing on abortion and the march and all of that. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.